So, good afternoon. The final part of our session today will be a discussion with CPPW communities San Antonio, Texas, Pima County, Arizona, and New York City, all of which are focusing on obesity prevention in cities with large Latino populations. The theme of our discussion will center around the challenges and lessons learned through the evaluation of policy change in these broad-based community programs. Oh, yes, I was just about to get to that. I have no relationships to disclose. So I'm going to go ahead and introduce everyone here today. Gretchen Van Wy is just joining us from New York City, and she is the Deputy Director of the Bureau of Chronic Disease Prevention and the Director of CPPW Obesity at the New York City Department of Health and Mental Hygiene. In this role, she oversees the implementation of a $20 million portfolio of obesity prevention and control activities focused in community and school settings. And then joining us from San Antonio is the University of Texas School of Public Health, which is working with the local health department as an external evaluator of CPPW, evaluation co-PI Jennifer Shaw, research graduate assistant Jenny Hickson, and our former co-PI Dr. Rojas, who sadly left us for retirement in August. And we also have Rebecca Drummond from Pima County. She's the Program Director for Family Wellness at the University of Arizona, Zuckerman College of Public Health, and she's the co-PI for evaluation with the Pima CPPW County Initiative. Thank you all for being here. Okay, so briefly, a few of the topics this discussion will focus on include the challenges of working with new versus established community partners. Also, we will look at the evaluation in the context of achieving broad systems changes within a brief time period from the perspectives of process and outcomes. And finally, recommendations for evaluating future community interventions. And time permitting, we will be discussing cross-community evaluation collaboration. So to start things off, evaluation of a broad coalition-based policy change program such as CPPW requires the rapid development of new relationships between a variety of community sectors, including non-traditional public health partners. How has your community's relationship with partners prior to CPPW impacted the evaluation process? Who wants to start things off?
Go ahead.
Do we need to go up here?
Yes, we don't have a mic pass, so we might need to come.
We can hear you.
You can hear.
Okay.
We want to record it, though.
So you have to get up.
Okay. Okay. That's a good question. I think historically, like I said, I personally hadn't had that much experience working in the urban context in Tucson, which is interesting. I've always been in the rural communities. Part of the requirement to receive CPPW was you had to be coalition-based, and so there was a coalition that started, and it is kind of interesting what happens to coalitions and communities when there's this influx of funding, and it can be good and it can be bad. Like I said, this RF funding created 150 new jobs, so even though maybe some of the partner agencies were the similar and had a history of working together, you're still dealing with a lot of new people that got scooped up to fill in these positions. And so there is always a learning curve about how people are interacting, to what extent they understand the purpose of the grant, you know, when they're hired 6 months afterwards. And that's always an interesting learning curve. Collaborating. I guess from an evaluation perspective, too, a lot of times, you know, people will think, well, what do you want from us? What do we have to do? And I always lead by saying, well, we don't have any evaluation requirements, because I don't know, many of you might know from federal funding, there really aren't that many evaluation requirements. There's monitoring process, and then there's some surveillance. And in our case, we work with the county health department, but mostly they collect all the contract compliance issues for reporting on their action plans. And then collaboration is interesting. I think that one of the key things is there's depth and then there's breadth of collaboration. So, you know, sometimes if I've seen in communities where the key agency that was funded just keeps all the money, and then the community partners are upset because they didn't dole out the money and share subcontracts. And then other times, collaboration is sharing subcontracts, but maybe they aren't really collaborating. So there's lots of depth and breadth involved with that. And so teams that we've had a longer history with, we could move forward with, and then some of the newer teams, it was a get-to-know-you process, and just trying to provide some assistance as well. Also with grassroots agencies, I think one of the things in terms of sort of agendas from a federal standpoint and a national cooperative agreement, and how does that relate with community folks? Is obesity even a priority for them? What does it mean to them to talk about policy or systems change? And how do we help translate some of these ideas and also community agencies that might be more interested in education and outreach? We can partner with them and help them still do what they want to do, but call it something else to serve the purpose of the grant. For example, if they wanted to do classes and now they think that they're being told they can't do classes, well, if they're developing a curriculum that they're going to disseminate, then they need to pilot that curriculum, and in the time period of a grant, they might pilot it with the people that they want to serve. So there's definitely a learning curve in collaborating and providing assistance and doing evaluation. I'll let you go.
I'll just continue that and say, as Rebecca pointed out, I think that in terms of the partnerships, as our partners sort of came together, thinking about policy in terms of it could be appropriation, it can be regulation, or it can be law. For some of our partners, and I'll just take transportation for instance, there's a federal set of codes in terms of marshland and sidewalks and so forth that implementing a policy means one thing to them in terms of the amount of steps that it takes to do it versus maybe an administrative policy for parks and recs or perhaps library of extending hours. So I think that as we talked about policy change and partners, just coming together and talking the same language about what we meant by the term policy, and then realizing again that there are sort of different levels to policy, different steps, and that one partner may not realize the amount of time or effort that it takes another partner to actually get something done. In terms of like complete streets, the amount of both community buy-in that you need to pass that policy versus, again, extended hours might not necessarily need as much community buy-in or legislative or municipal buy-in. So again, I think that you're absolutely right in terms of the partners understanding each other and what they bring to the table, and especially in CPPW, we saw very non-traditional partners coming together. And I think that you picked up on it too, but in terms of reporting, again, when we started the evaluation process, a lot of these municipalities or departmentals are used to reporting, or what they would call evaluation, which is not necessarily how we would define evaluation. So our team went through a very laborious process of putting together a technical training on what do we mean when we even say evaluation. And so really doing that training part that you picked up on earlier, and as Jenny mentioned. But I think that just speaking the same language is a good place to start. And understanding, and Jenny did an excellent job of saying, now we're not just talking about networking, we're not just talking about coordination, we're talking about true collaboration. And that is beyond the one partner's meeting a month, you have to talk to each other. and we kind of saw aha moments along the way where it's like, oh, hey, I'll send you that flyer. So they started really engaging with each other, and it was a beautiful process, but it took us a while to get there. So I think that was the biggest encounter that we had.
So in New York City, I think we probably work a lot internally in terms of our evaluation work. We really have a lot of resources in-house for our, especially for our outcome evaluation. So we have our own community health survey, which is sort of like the New York City version of the behavioral risk factor surveillance system. And we had a youth risk behavior survey we do every other year in all our, in a, you know, a robust sample of our schools, in our high schools. And we have a couple of other different tools that we use for evaluation. In terms of working with partners, though, we do, that's sort of where a lot of our process evaluation actually comes in, because if we're looking to monitor new policies adopted by organizations or, you know, them spreading the word and sharing the educational messages that we have, we write that into the deliverables of our contracts with those organizations. So we have 5 community grantees, 1 in each borough, that's sort of working on advancing some of the work around sugary drinks in organizations. So we ask them to report back to us on what they're doing. Similarly, with our faith-based organizations, we ask them to tell us about their changes in their organizations and what else they're doing. So we use a mix, but we probably have a different set of expectation for community partners and external partners than we do for our internal work. And we're able to kind of rely on our internal resources for a lot of the evaluation pieces, and if sort of like in those 2 broad ranges. And then for special projects, we do have special evaluations that we do with other partners. For example, we are evaluating our Move to Improve program, which is an in-class physical education program. And we have pretty much done that on our own, but we do consult often with New York University. We consult with them on the evaluation of our water jets, which is actually paid for from a different grant, but is evaluating a piece of the CPDW, one of our interventions. And so we really try to leverage the different relationships and funding sources and that we have so that we can get the most out of our, learn the most about what we're doing. So it's kind of a mix, and it's a mix of outcomes, it's a mix of process given our relationships with organizations, and then it's sort of these special projects, and it really depends on the topic for some of those.
So for San Antonio, I think if any of y'all are working on CPPW, you know, coalitions are popping up around this thing like mushrooms after rain. I mean, and so part of the thing that we evaluated in San Antonio is that over the summer, I mentioned we have a Mayor's Fitness Council, which is, I was born and raised in San Antonio, and there's a lot of excitement in the city right now about some of these sorts of activities that are going on because no one's ever done them before, and there's a tremendous amount of goodwill. But people are getting coalition burnout. And so I think one of the things that we are looking at as an evaluation team is the efficiency of all of these partnerships and groups and collaborations. We did key informant interviews with 56 leaders, folks that were involved in the coalitions in some form or fashion. And I had done another series of 20 key informant interviews over the summer with the Mayor's Fitness Council folks. And what we found was the same themes, which was, first of all, people are incredibly excited about these new relationships generally in San Antonio. They're mainly new. But they are quickly getting burnt out because they're attending 5 meetings a week to go, and everybody's talking about the same topics over and over again. And they're like, can we please streamline? Can we please get everybody on the same page? That this seems really ridiculous. And so part of what we're looking at is, and you know, this is just part of group process that you start with 80 and you narrow down to 3, but that's one of the things that we've been looking at with CPPW is they wrote into the grant as part of these 43 initiatives to start all these different groups without really thinking about the fact that you're going to have the same very active community members on all of those groups. So that's been one of the things we've been looking at with our evaluation. We've done that mainly through key informant interviews. We haven't really found another way to do it. It's very time intensive to do the evaluation that way, but we feel it's the best source of data that we can get. And it's also created an opportunity for them to give us a lot of feedback on topics that maybe we hadn't included in the evaluation about how the councils or coalitions are functioning.
All right, does anyone else have anything to add?
Does anyone in the audience have anything to add? Have y'all worked on these projects? Have you found anything?
And just to add on to the evaluation workshops, it was a really effective thing that we did. It only took an hour and a half to meet with these people and just kind of give them, like Parks and Rec and Public Works, just give them an overview of what public health is and what the main objectives of CPPW are. And I think it really helped help them buy in to the evaluation process and working with us.
The typical stakeholder analysis and buy-in that you
who really had no idea what it was they were, like, what the end goal was. So we did these workshops over in the spring because we were getting this really weird data that we knew, like, there was some disconnect going on, we couldn't figure it out. So we did these evaluation workshops, and it totally changed our relationship and what we were doing.
And we weren't sure if we can do them, and it kind of goes back to technical assistance. And we found ourselves providing a lot of technical assistance throughout the grant. So, all right, so on to the next section. CPBW-funded communities were given a condensed timeline of 2 years to implement policy, systems, and environmental changes. How did this brief timeline affect your evaluation priorities in terms of process versus outcomes?
Well, I think in terms of, again, I mentioned it early in the presentation of when CDC and or other agencies set BMI as the outcome, we have a large problem in a 2-year time frame. And so I think part of the process was just being able to go through and say, what are those intermediate outcomes that we can use? Because we don't anticipate that we're going to see a change in BMI in 2 years. And so I think that we were very diligent in selecting those outcomes, measuring things like collaboration, measuring things, several of the common process measures, how many attendees did we have, were they satisfied with the event, and those kinds of things. But then getting creative and elaborative in terms of when can we do key informant interviews in this short time frame to try to get some of that qualitative data, when can we use social media, Facebook, Twitter, to get some of those stories that sell to the funding agency to say, well, we may not have a huge impact that you're expecting with $15.6 million, but we are affecting lives, which is what we try to do in public health. So, again, I think that we as an evaluation team just struggle because it seems like it's continuously just process measures, and we really want to get to the outcome measures. But then being realistic in terms of the funding that we had to do the evaluation, the staff that we have to complete that evaluation, and the time frame, as Jenny mentioned, our evaluation seems to be changing every other day, our evaluation plan, our evaluation outcomes. And again, because implementation barriers weren't necessarily seen when they had these lofty goals, like inventing or implementing a bike share program, we can imagine trying to get 1,000 bikes into a community in 6 months. You're going to have implementation issues. So therefore, you may be delayed 4 months in getting the bikes on the ground, which delays our evaluation process, and before you know it, 2 years is over. So just having that flexibility, I think, is another key issue in the evaluation process.
I think, in general, when we think about the timelines, to me, what this highlights is that public health agencies just need to have a commitment to ongoing surveillance. I think all of our agencies just really need to put money behind things like local behavioral risk factor surveillance systems or youth risk behavior surveys, and then some other kinds of things. I know in New York City we did something called the NYC Haines once in 2004. It was extremely expensive, and we always are trying to think about how we can do it again. But, I don't know how we would be able to do evaluation unless we had already baseline data on obesity and sugar sweetened beverage consumption and physical activity and everything. So I would always just make a plug for having leadership always consider evaluation and surveillance as part of any plan that they put forward. And so to do that, it's just sort of like a standing, ongoing commitment, regardless of what new funding streams become available for policy change or anything like that.
All right, are we out of time?
Yep. Okay. Well, thank you all for joining us. If you have any questions, you can reach the UT School of Public Health Evaluation Team at cppw@uth.tmc.edu.
I just want to thank the presenters. I think that what they've shown us is really a model approach to evaluation. It's a connector approach where they have moved and connected with all the stakeholders in the community. I think their major contributions are mapping the community profile, the assets, what is needed, the resources needed, and hopefully they will leave those resources and those maps for the stakeholders so that they can continue to make the changes. I think it's also wonderful that they're informing other related but agencies who do not know that they are agents of public health, like parks and recreation, urban planning, architecture, etc. Having been an evaluator in the 70s in New York for many social programs, it just raises the same issues that have not changed significantly over the last 40 years. Policy usually responds to an issue or a concern. And of course, the question, there's an assumption here that, you know, we know how to fight obesity, but really we have to ask ourselves first, in the dawning of the 21st century, how did obesity become a problem? And I think that's one thing that we need to look at. We do know there is a debate out there between social determinants and genetics, but really genetics did not pop up in the 21st century. If we look back historically, you know, we look at the workers, the farm workers, the contract laborers, they were all thin. So it's not an issue of genetics. It's more an issue of social determinants, and I think they all tried to tackle this. I think the question you raised at the end is really important and may say something to us politically and socially, which is how you get money to implement large-scale policy change to change BMI in 2 years. What is that really saying to us? And it certainly puts a burden and stress on the evaluators to try to complete. How do we develop priorities for change? I mean, they have a big agenda, and they are aware of all the important things that need to be changed, but obviously we can't change everything simultaneously. And what is the power of evaluators to say these are the priorities, this is where we're going to focus our resources? The other thing that has always been an issue nationally is, what are the incentives for collaboration for the partners? There are no incentives for them to collaborate. Therefore, there is very little possibility of policy change because they are oftentimes the frontline people. They have more than enough work. They oftentimes do not get incentives or release time dollars, like some professionals get, for their time. And the other big issue, I think, is after we see an evaluation that is so sophisticated and so systematic and well-organized, how do we begin to institutionalize some of these elements into the existing infrastructure, like the Department of Health, like the Department of Parks and Recreation? So I think all those questions are left unanswered. But certainly you have all done a heroic job and continue until you finish. So those were some of my comments. I want to open it up to the audience to either comment on any of the presentations or on thoughts that you may have about evaluation of your community programs or experiences you may have with evaluation. Well, do you think this is the way to tackle the issue of obesity? I mean, we have two incredible, we have Arizona and San Antonio, Texas. What do you all think of investing $15.6 million into this evaluation in 2 years? What do you think about that? And what do you think about the fact that right before San Antonio had already gotten $16 million to do another program? And the question that was also raised for me, what lessons were learned from that program that could have helped this program? How does policy work in the United States?
I think if I could, one of the things that I have personally struggled with is that we're basically spending $15.6 million when the real problem is poverty in our city. I mean, like, it's basically like you overlay obesity, you overlay teen pregnancy, you overlay whatever. It's poverty.
So that's the question, Jennifer. What if we would have taken $16 million and raised the salary of teachers and put in some playgrounds and maybe done housing? I think of the housing in Los Angeles. It's called New Economics for Women, and I have site visited them where they have worked with architects, et cetera, and they have a daycare, they have a GED center on the bottom, they have a computer center for the parents so that Latino parents and African American parents can get their GED, can learn some computer skills, their children are taken care of. What about if we would have taken the money and actually invested in the people? So that is a moral struggle. It's an ethical struggle. I'm sure you have all, you know, had to struggle with.
I kind of reflect on this a lot. I was just, oddly enough, at a talk today in the conference about the effectiveness of aid. So it was much more in global health and international development. And some of the themes that they were talking about aid dollars, is it effective, dependency on aid, was kind of reminding me of working on federal grants, because, you know, the very first page that you fill out when you go to grants.gov is request for assistance. Mm-hmm. And if people kind of, you know, you really have to back off sometimes and think, well, everyone wants a grant or cooperative agreement, because what ultimately it means is we're going to have some more jobs in our health department or in our school or wherever. And so this $60 million meant jobs, and this was our money. Mm-hmm. But what does it really do to a community in terms of sustainability? And is it mm-hmm. really a good thing to throw that much money at a community? And were they prepared for it? I mean, it gave us jobs, so that was good. You know, but mm-hmm. now we're not going to have those jobs in March, and I don't know what's going to happen. And in an ideal world, and speaking to your point about investing in surveillance systems and things that will continue, in an ideal world, all of these different funding opportunities are layered upon each other, and you know, supposedly are going to make some kind of progress. But every time a five-year grant goes away, and then there's nothing for 10 years, and then another five-year grant comes along, and then there's nothing for 10 years, I do wonder if we are really addressing the root causes, which are, you know, if this, it's almost like an assistance model. It's like we're in a developing country in FEMA category.
Well, I think, one of the things you can do, which I've heard of other people doing, is make sure that you leave a basic evaluation plan in the Department of Health as part of the infrastructure. And that maybe you ask, you know, you're doing some stuff around school, that you argue for and struggle for school-designated resources. I mean, there are things, but it is above and beyond our call of duty. I mean, it is a burden on top of the already existing evaluator role. So, last comment, yes?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I mean, I do think some organizations do, and I think it's up for the leadership to make sure that mm-hmm. it's the responsibility of grant recipients to a certain extent to make sure that things are layering upon each other and building, and that they're actually building towards creating the better. It's not just sort of like little disjointed pieces. And I know that in New York, we've really used it to, you know, to build from one thing to the next. And it's not just the federal grants, but the other. We're leveraging dollars from Robert Johnson and other, you know, other places that we receive, and it's what sustains and makes it possible for us to then change environments. And we're not giving dollars directly in people's hands, but what we're doing is making the grocery stores in their neighborhoods and the corner stores in their neighborhoods closer to being like they are in wealthy neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. And so that's the kind of thing that we can do to change the environment around people, rather than just putting dollars in, you know, dollars in pockets, because that's sort of the internal thing. But is it poverty? Is it poverty? And then the question is, if it is poverty, is it individual poverty or is it neighborhood poverty? Mm-hmm. And or is it a mix of the two? And if we're taking the neighborhood and changing it, and maybe the people's incomes are still similar, but the resources and the environment they had is more akin to what it would be like if they could live in a more affluent neighborhood.
Exactly. But you're asking as a question. I don't think it's a question. I mean, it's a fact. So I think we need to stop asking the question, is it individual community poverty? It is individual poverty within the community. Let me give you the last comment, and then we're going to close.
And I was just going to say, I think from an evaluation perspective, I know that we've consistently tried to put in all of our questionnaires, no matter what the, you know, sort of no matter what the program is, do you have transportation? Do you have this? So how can we start documenting those social determinants through all of our programs, mm-hmm. irrespective of the funding source, to be able to, again, almost leverage evaluation dollars, if you mm-hmm. will, in
yes.
saying, you know, how do we triangulate data to create those community profiles mm-hmm. that really get at the root causes?
Yes. Okay. Well, please join me in thanking this wonderful panel for their work and the presentation. Thank you.